From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. As we approach the November 2nd election, we're talking with many of the candidates in the various races. This hour, we focus on Iowa's 1st Congressional District. In the first half hour, a conversation I had yesterday with 1st District Congressman Bruce Braley. The Democrat is seeking re-election to his third term. I asked him about Cash for Clunkers, a program he co-sponsored, and what it's like to be the target of attacks by out-of-state interest groups. Then we'll speak with his opponent, Republican challenger Ben Lang, and ask how his approach to representing the district would differ from Braley's. That's all coming up this hour. First, a look at the news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As we approach the November election, we're talking with many of the candidates courting your vote. Today, we focus on Iowa's 1st Congressional District. In that contest, Democratic Congressman Bruce Braley is seeking a third term and is facing a challenge from Republican Ben Lang, an attorney from Independence. We'll talk with Mr. Lang in the second half of our program, but first we hear from Congressman Braley. I spoke with him yesterday and began by asking him about the angry electorate we've been hearing so much about. Who in his 1st district is angry, and what's behind that anger?
Well, I think the biggest thing voters should be angry about is a group of anonymous outsiders coming in and trying to steal this election for my opponent. This is a group that is attempting a hostile takeover of this 1st district election. They want to maintain tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans, and they're willing to spend millions of dollars against me because I've pledged to maintain tax breaks for middle-class families and let them expire for billionaires. But I don't care how much money they spend to try to silence my voice. I'm going to stand my ground because it's in the best interest of Iowans, and I won't be intimidated by one powerful, wealthy, secret group.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're referring to fill our listeners in on this a little bit more, is that recently Eastern Iowans have been seeing ads targeting you, paid for by the American Future Fund. A recent Washington Post article by Aaron Blake pointed to this $800,000 ad buy as an effort by Republicans to target a rising star in the Democratic Party. It must be nice, on the one hand, to be considered a rising star. What's your reaction to that characterization?
Well, I think my reaction is the reaction of most Iowans, and that's concern when people can hide behind their anonymous status as a nonprofit donor as a result of the Citizens United decision and avoid being held accountable for spending huge sums of money to try to win a political election. And if you look at this race, you'll see that they're trying to spend millions of dollars. They've already spent close to $500,000 against me before they announced this $800,000 ad buy. It's a perfect example of why we need better election finance laws so that we can have transparent, fair elections. And it's ironic that Terry Branstad, who used to serve on the board of American Future Fund, came out yesterday demanding more transparency in how elections are paid for. And this race in the 1st district should be a big wake-up call for voters throughout Iowa who can see through these attempts to try to take over our elections. And we've always been known as a state that wants fair, transparent elections. And I think that my race is an example of what's wrong with politics.
How will, because you mentioned the Supreme Court ruling, how will the Supreme Court ruling perhaps make this election a landmark election?
Well, we're already seeing tens of millions of dollars more spent by outside groups. In the last election that was a midterm election, the amount those outside groups of anonymous donors spent was a small fraction of the total spending in these races. But the most recent information I've read indicates that almost half of the spending to date is by these anonymous corporate donors who come in and try to take over an election and then hide behind their anonymous status so that voters can't go find out who's trying to buy these elections.
Given the Supreme Court ruling and that ruling stands, what would be the solution in your eyes?
Well, we passed the Disclose Act, Ben, in the House earlier this year and sent it to the Senate. And it's ironic that Republican senators filibustered that bill and prevented it from even coming up for a vote. that Disclose Act had some very common sense reforms that would have addressed the problems left over by this Citizens United opinion. It would have demanded transparency so that if you're a corporation, including a foreign corporation trying to influence elections, which is what a lot of the reporting has been talking about lately, there are going to be restrictions on what you can give and how you have to disclose your involvement so that voters in Iowa and around the country know who's supporting candidates. Anybody can go to the Federal Election Commission website and find out who has donated to my campaign and how much they've given. And that's the way it should be. It holds people accountable. But there is an unlimited ability for anonymous corporate donors from outside the state of Iowa to contribute to these attack campaigns, and nobody knows who's paying for it.
Let's look at some of the charges that this attack campaign has against you. One of them is that you have voted with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi 98% of the time. Are you simply towing the party line in Washington?
Well, first of all, let's set the record straight. Speaker Pelosi has voted with me less than 6% of the time. I voted with the Republican Minority Leader John Boehner nearly 1,200 times, and I voted with my Republican colleague from the 4th District of Iowa, Tom Latham, nearly 60% of the time. But the most important thing that voters in Iowa's 1st District want to know, Ben, is that I work every day to fight for Iowa families, and I vote for the people that I represent 100% of the time.
You have embraced the term populist. You have even founded the Populist Caucus in the House. Healthcare reform is one of the top agenda items for the Populist Caucus. So I'm wondering, why aren't you embracing President Obama's healthcare reform legislation more vigorously on the campaign trail?
Well, I don't know where you've been, Ben, but I embrace it vigorously every day on the campaign trail when I'm out talking to constituents and potential voters. And one of the things that I think voters in Iowa need to realize is that the Republican Party of Iowa and my opponent want to repeal the health care bill that we passed. And we need to talk about what they mean by that. Because what that would mean is a massive tax increase for small businesses. It would restore discrimination against children if we repeal that bill. It would restore lifetime limits on coverage that send people into bankruptcy. It would restore an insurance company's authority to cancel your policy when you get sick, which is what's been happening. It would eliminate free preventative care for seniors, which is what's in the bill. It would enlarge the Medicare prescription drug donut hole for seniors because we're closing that and every senior is getting a $250 rebate if they're in the donut hole this year. It would abolish help for early retirees, and it would kick children under the age of 26 off their parents' policies. So when Republicans like my opponent talk about wanting to repeal the health care bill, I think voters in Iowa are sophisticated enough to realize they're talking about getting rid of some really good public policy, including tax credits for small businesses where they can deduct up to 35% of their premium contributions this year, and by 2014 can get credits for up to 50% of their premium contributions. I think that this bill is good for Iowa. I think it's good for small businesses who have a hard time providing coverage to their employees. And I think it's especially good for seniors and children who are going to benefit enormously from the improvements that this bill has in place.
Congressman Braley, how then do you account for the fact that this is not entirely popular, according to polls, and or at least widely misunderstood by a lot of Americans? What exactly are many Iowans and Americans who don't like it or at least skeptical misunderstanding about the health care reform?
Well, it's important to realize that this bill has been the subject of a broad campaign of misinformation that's being put out by groups like Fox News and a lot of conservative right-wing radio commentators who don't want Americans to understand how good this bill is going to be for them. They don't talk about the impact on deficit reduction that this bill is projected to have according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, despite the fact that they all want to talk about reducing the deficit. They don't want to talk about the fact that right now people are denied access to insurance policies because of pre-existing conditions. And so one of the things we need to do a better job of is explaining what is in the bill and what they're talking about when they say they want to repeal it, just as I've mentioned here today.
An Associated Press poll recently found that 40% of respondents, congressmen, said that health care reform did not go far enough. What do you think? Should it have done more?
Well, that's the interesting consideration based upon the earlier point you made about people not finding it popular and then others who believe it didn't go far enough. You know, there's a lot we need to do because we have, according to current estimates, 50 million people in this country who don't have health insurance. And we all know what happens when they don't have health care. It's not health coverage. We still end up paying for it, whether it's by our own tax dollars or in the form of higher premiums. So this was a good starting point. We have a lot of work to do to make sure that we're providing quality care at an affordable price. And that's why I was very proud that I was able to secure as part of the negotiations an agreement to put on a national health summit on quality of care and ending geographic disparities that have penalized Iowa health care providers, which has been a longstanding problem. And that health care summit took place on Monday of this week, Ben. And I'm very proud of the fact that I was able to secure positions at that national summit for the head of Genesis Hospital in Davenport, which is in my district, Doug Cropper, and also for Dr. Mike Kitchell, who's a past president of the Iowa Medical Society. We wanted to make sure that as we move forward on health care, we're having people at the table who understand how to provide high-quality care at an affordable cost and use that as a model for the rest of the country. And I'm confident that we're going to continue to build on this and improve health care for all Americans.
Your opponent, Republican Ben Lang, will be on the second half of this program. Let me lay out one of his central charges, a quote from him, and have you respond to it, please, Congressman Braley. He says that you have recklessly supported your party's runaway spending spree, which has led to unacceptably high unemployment and joblessness. Respond to that.
Well, I don't think my opponent has a very good sense of what the job of being a member of Congress is all about. When we took the oath of office in January of 2009, we were facing the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression, and we had to make tough decisions. And that's what being a congressman or congresswoman is all about. Sometimes you have to do the right thing, even if it's tough. And I always believe that there are people who would rather do what's popular than what's right, and that's not why I went to Washington. We had to make hard decisions on how to stabilize the economy. Every indication is that those tough decisions are having a positive impact. We have seen a significant increase in private sector job growth throughout the first 8 months of this year. We are seeing encouraging signs that we're starting to make progress in putting people back to work. I've been touring talking about my Back to Work Act, which was passed into law in March. It provides a credit to employers who hire unemployed workers, and they don't have to pay their share of Social Security withholding if they hire someone who hasn't worked for the past 60 days. And if they keep that employee on their payroll for at least a year, Ben, they get another $1,000 credit. There are 5.6 million employees who've been hired since February that would qualify for that credit. And here in Iowa, 53,000 employees have been hired just since February. That will give a huge boost to small businesses who are looking to expand their workforce.
You mentioned tough decisions that are not necessarily popular. What is the toughest decision you had to make that you knew would not be popular with a large number of constituents in the 1st District of Iowa?
I think it was voting for the Troubled Asset Relief Program after receiving calls from the Chief Operating Officer of John Deere and the Chief Executive Officer of Principal Financial Group in Des Moines, two of the largest employers in the state. That was after the bill had failed the first time. It was after it had come back from the Senate with improvements, including billions of dollars of disaster tax benefits for Iowans who'd lost their homes and businesses in the floods of 2008, and coming down much harder on Wall Street to make sure that we fix the problem that led to this collapse. And I've been pushing ever since to improve the financial oversight on Wall Street, and we've been successful in passing legislation that's going to end the philosophy of too big to fail. So I'm proud of what's happened. I'm proud of what's the type of progress we're making, but it doesn't make those votes any easier.
There is broad support among the public for cutting the federal deficit, but that will mean reducing government spending. Where specifically should spending be cut?
Well, Ben, I have made it very clear since the president announced his budget freeze that he needed to expand that to include all non-discretionary spending in all federal agencies. He had specifically exempted the Department of Defense and the Department of Health and Human Services, and yet some of the biggest waste and fraud is in those two agencies. And one of the ways we can help fight the deficit is by not continuing the Bush tax cuts for the richest 2% of Americans, which will add $700 billion more to the deficit. I've gone after waste in Medicare, which could save as much as $700 billion. That's why the improvements we made to the health care bill have such a long-term impact that they're often cited as some of the most important changes to how we pay for health care. I've also gone aggressively after defense contractors like Blackwater and Halliburton when we've wasted billions of dollars of taxpayer money. So we need to continue to be vigilant, and we need to continue to provide the oversight so that taxpayers get the best value for their tax dollars. That's why when the Recovery Act passed, I posted a website that listed on my congressional website every project in the Recovery Act that came into the first district. I also put up a waste watchdog feature on my website so people could report instances of waste, fraud, or abuse involving those dollars. And that's all part of my efforts to make sure we have as much transparency as we can to protect American taxpayers.
Can the deficit, though, really be brought under control and possibly eliminated without raising taxes on those people in the lower tax brackets?
Well, we have to realize that middle-class families are the ones that have paid the biggest price throughout this recession. It hasn't been the wealthiest Americans who've been struggling to get by on a daily basis. And so what we have to do is we have to both focus on how we can identify targeted spending cuts, eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal spending system, and at the same time find ways to put people back to work, because the more people who return to the workforce and pay federal taxes and Social Security taxes and Medicare taxes, the more it's going to help reduce the deficit. So we need to focus both on job creation and targeted spending cuts.
But what about that question of raising taxes on people who make less than $250,000? Will you say, I will not do that as long as I'm in office?
Well, what I can say is that if you look at what we've done and compare the record of the past 4 years, we have a situation where the middle class is paying the lowest at any point since 1950s, and about 80 to 95% of Americans received a tax cut in the Recovery Act, and it was the biggest tax cut in history from a dollar standpoint. So we have to focus on ways of identifying revenue streams, but I don't think that should be put on the backs of the middle class. We have to be creative in coming up with ways that we can generate revenues, but we don't want to put more of a burden on middle-class taxpayers.
Congressman Braley, you were a co-sponsor of the government's Cash for Clunkers program that boosted auto sales by 360,000 during the 2 months it was in place, according to economists at the University of Chicago and the University of California in Berkeley. But in the 7 months that followed, according to this study, sales were down by 360,000 compared with what they would have been without the program, the study found. Now, the implication there is that the program didn't bring new buyers into the market, but it encouraged people who would have bought a car anyway to make their purchase a few months sooner. What is your reaction to the fact that Cash for Clunkers seems to have been a wash in this case?
Well, I strongly disagree with your characterization of it being a wash, because I've seen studies.
Well, I'm citing a study by two university economists.
Yeah, and I can show you other studies by university of economists that reached exactly the opposite conclusions. I would ask listeners to go talk to any auto dealer in eastern Iowa, and they will tell you that jobs would have been lost without that program. It was a win-win-win situation, which dramatically increased purchases of vehicles. It took aging vehicles that were gas guzzlers off the road. Time magazine did a study of the ripple effect of that program and said that the net impact of the program was easily north of $25 billion, Ben, and that's for less than a $3 billion investment. So I think that it had an enormous positive impact on the economy, and I think economists who've studied this are going to conclude in the future that it wasn't one of the most directly effective economic stimulus programs in the history of the United States. Those cars flew off the shelf and the money flew out of the program and did exactly what it was supposed to do, which was provide a short-term stimulus and put literally thousands of auto workers back to work.
If you've just joined us, Congressman Bruce Braley is my guest, and he's seeking his reelection to a third term in Iowa's 1st District, running against Republican challenger Ben Lang, which you'll hear in the second part of our program, a conversation with Republican Ben Lang. A few minutes left, Congressman Braley. You and your opponent obviously differ strongly in your view about the appropriate role for government, the degree to which government should try to solve problems. What is your overarching philosophy on the government's role in the lives of citizens?
Well, I have the overarching philosophy that I learned growing up in the small town of Brooklyn, Iowa, where nobody said, "Are you a Republican or a Democrat?" when they had a problem. They would ask for your help and they got it. And the overarching philosophy that I learned growing up in that small town and going to church was that we're all in this together and that the fundamental role of government is to be there for you in a time of need and help you get through difficult periods of your life and get back on your feet so you can be self-sufficient. My opponent and the Republican Party of Iowa have a much different view of the role of government, and all you have to do is look at the Republican Party of Iowa's platform. They want to abolish Social Security. They want to abolish Medicare. They want to abolish Medicaid. They want to abolish all corporate income tax and the minimum wage. They want to abolish the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Education, the Department of Energy. They want to abolish OSHA and repeal all these positive health care reforms. So I think when you look at what we view as the fundamental role of government, you couldn't ask for a more starkly different choice for voters. I will do everything I can to preserve those programs because there are literally millions of people in this country who depend upon them to get through their daily needs, and they are a vital part of what the government does.
The Washington Post article that I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, Congressman Braley, the article by Aaron Blake, about these $800,000 ad buy by Republicans to target what they see as a rising star, you in the Democratic Party. It goes on to say what part of the reason the American Future Fund is targeting you in this campaign is to try to hurt your chances in a statewide race for a Senate seat in the future. Do you aspire to the Senate?
I think that that's a complete mischaracterization of what's actually going on. I think I'm being targeted because I consistently stand up to powerful corporate CEOs when they come before me in Congress. I speak truth to fear every day in Washington and stand up for middle-class families in Iowa. And Iowa voters are smart, Ben. They know me. They know I've got a tough race and I'm working very hard in my district, which is 40% independent voters. There are no guarantees and you have to earn your seat every time. And I'm focused on winning my seat in the 1st District of Iowa. And I think voters are going to see through the lies that the American Future Fund is saying about me because they know I was born in Iowa. I lived my entire life here. I went to school here. I got married here. I raised my kids here. And I spent all my adult life volunteering to make my community a better place. I think that's what people want to know about me when they decide whether or not they want to vote for me on November 2nd. And that's what I'm going to ask them to focus on when they make that difficult decision on who they want to support.
Congressman Bruce Braley, I want to thank you for taking the time to come into our studios. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
Democratic Congressman Bruce Braley seeking his third term in office. Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear from his opponent, Republican challenger Ben Lang. That's when the exchange continues here on Iowa Public Radio. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're focusing on Iowa's 1st congressional district race. The 1st district lies in northeastern Iowa, including the cities of Davenport, Bettendorf, Cedar Falls, Waterloo, Dubuque, and Clinton. Democrat Bruce Braley has represented the district since 2006. In the first half hour today, we listened to a conversation I had with Braley recorded yesterday. Now we're joined live by Bruce Braley's Republican opponent, Ben Lang, an attorney from Independence, from our studios of Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Falls. Mr. Lang, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Now, in our first half hour, I understand you could hear the conversation with Congressman Braley. I asked him initially about the anger many voters are feeling this election cycle. And Congressman Braley said that anger should come from the fact that this race, in his view, is being hijacked by anonymous wealthy interests. And we know that the American Future Fund has bought $800,000 worth of ad time to run ads against Bruce Braley. So how do you respond to this charge that you're letting anonymous wealthy interests hijack this race? Speak for you.
Well, I'm sure Congressman Braley's position is that he can blame it on some other interest out there. But the fact of the matter is people are angry because he's voted 98% in line with Nancy Pelosi. You know, since he's taken office, the debt has nearly doubled to $13 trillion. Unemployment's up from 4.5% to 9.5%. And that's not political spin. Those are the facts. Those are the cold, hard facts since my opponent's taken office. And that's what they're upset about. They're upset about his votes. They're not interested in a squabble between Bruce Braley and a special interest group out there. They want to talk about policy, and that's what I stay focused on, is talking about the issues that Eastern Iowans care most about.
So what is your connection with the American Future Fund?
I have no connection with the American Future Fund. As you know, I am prohibited by law from coordinating communications with them. I don't coordinate communications with them. I don't speak to them about these issues. I find out like everyone else does. You know, I see a press release up on the news. I see an advertisement on TV. And so for Bruce to make the allegations that I am responsible for this or come back and attack me on television because of what an outside group is doing, it's simply false. And if you want to talk about outside influence, look at Bruce Braley's, who's back in his campaign. Since he began running for office, 91% of his support comes from outside the 1st District of Iowa. So if we want to talk about outside influence, we can certainly look at who's backing Bruce's campaign.
Okay, let's talk about sort of more generally speaking, when an interest group buys ad time against your opponent in this case, basically benefiting you, as the American Future Fund buy of $800,000 worth of ad time does, what responsibility, if any, do you have to make sure those ads are truthful?
Well, I'm completely at a lack of control of what they are doing. As I've stated before, I have no control over their message, what they're talking about, who they're communicating to. But like any Iowan, you know, I want to make sure that what is being out there in front of the public, that they're educated voters and they know exactly what the issues are. Mm-hmm. And as long as the issues continue to remain upon Bruce's voting record, 98% line of Nancy Pelosi, supporting stimulus, bailout, cap and trade, all the policies, then I think those are issues that voters want to know about. And that's my responsibility, is to stay on the issues. And that's what I continue to do.
And I do want to talk about those issues in just a moment. But just to finish up with this point about the anger that Bruce Braley sees, and you see the anger, of course, differently, and, of course, the recent Supreme Court ruling about corporations being having the voice of persons in political ads being able to donate. Should the American Future Fund, for example, have to disclose its donors? Do you feel comfortable with the fact that there's a lot of money flowing into this campaign, maybe for Democrats, maybe for Republicans or other parties? We just don't know where that money's coming from. Are you comfortable with that, or should there be some sort of disclosure?
Well, we do know where that money's coming. If you look at, as Bruce mentioned before, if you look at who's contributing to his campaign, you will see over the life cycle of his career as a politician, 91% of his support comes from outside of the 1st District of Iowa. And so when he talks about outside influence, he is talking about the very people that support his campaign that come in and support him and support him financially. And again, you know, the issue to me is everyone has an opinion out there, but let's stay talking about the issues that are important to voters. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to the policy with cap and trade, stimulus, bailout, Obamacare. Bruce has supported them all, and now he is put in a position of having to defend his record. And he doesn't want to talk about that. He wants to talk about some other issue out there that, frankly, voters want to concentrate on his voting record.
Okay, we want to give our chance, since you're on live, we want to give our listeners a chance to ask you a question. Are you perhaps an angry voter in Iowa's 1st District? What's behind your anger? What question do you have for Ben Lang? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR talk. So let's address one aspect that you've mentioned a couple times already in the first few minutes. One of the claims you make repeatedly, your campaign does, you do, is that Congressman Braley has voted with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi 98% of the time. Braley disputes that number, also points to the fact that he has voted with Republican Congressman of the 4th District, Tom Latham, 60% of the time. I think he mentioned, as you heard in that interview, he's voted with Minority Leader John Boehner 1,200 times. So if we assume that those numbers are correct, does this make, for instance, Tom Latham, a politician who simply follows the lead of the Democratic congressional leadership 60% of the time?
No. And this is where you see Bruce Braley playing some games with the numbers here. And the fact of the matter is Bruce has voted with Nancy Pelosi from San Francisco, California, 98% of the time. And it was what he could be referring to are votes under suspension, where every member of the House votes in favor of some particular piece of legislation. It's under suspension of the rules because they all agree upon it. So, of course, he's going to point to votes along those lines. But if you go back to the issues that people are wanting to talk about, Bruce continues to follow the party line, follows Nancy Pelosi 98% of the time. And those are facts. Again, those are numbers. Those are the cold, hard facts that Bruce now has to defend here over the next 26 days, I believe.
A recent Washington Post article I mentioned also in my conversation with Bruce Braley by Aaron Blake pointed to this $800,000 buy as an effort by Republicans to target a, quote, rising star in the Democratic Party, calling Bruce Braley that. Now, you, yesterday, the National Republican Congressional Committee named you a young gun, quote, basically a rising star, a well-positioned person to take on an incumbent congressman. How do you feel about that title, young gun?
Well, I don't focus too much on titles. You know, the whole reason I got into this is exactly why all the other voters out in Iowa are frustrated with what's taking place in Washington, D.C. And, you know, again, I go back to since my opponent's taken office, unemployment 4.5% to 9.5%, the national debt nearly doubling to $13 trillion, home ownership at lows in recent decades, 19 million homes sitting empty. Those are the reasons I've got into this. This isn't about titles or labels that anyone wants to place on me or my opponent.
Okay, so
this is really about the issues, and that's what voters want to talk about, and I continue to get that message out there that this isn't anything personal with my opponent. This is purely on policy, and that's what we need to focus on.
Okay, I get it that you don't want to do titles here. So let's ask what's behind the title of Young Gun. What experience do you have that points to your qualifications to be congressman for the 1st District?
Well, I noticed Bruce mentioned there that he didn't think I had a good understanding of being a member of Congress, and he's right. If he thinks that I don't have the experience in doubling the national debt and continuing to support these policies that are killing jobs in Eastern Iowa, he's right. I won't support that. But listen, this isn't about a resume comparison. This is about someone that is going to stand on principle, that's going to go to Washington, D.C. and stand on principle before party. You know, we can continue to send the same old politicians back to Washington, D.C. and hope something changes, or we can make a decision. And I think that's what voters are going to do on November 2nd is they're going to make a decision. Do we send the same politicians back to Washington and hope for change, or do we send somebody that's going to say enough is enough with this, put a check and balance on this administration and these policies, and someone that really believes principle is before party?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that your primary qualification for being a congressman is that you've never been congressman?
My primary qualification is that I am putting principle above everything else. And I think people respect that. I think people want to hear that. And that's what I continue to talk to people about. That, you know, we don't have to go through a resume comparison. They want to know what we're going to do and where we fall in the line and where our principles stand. And so I'll continue to talk about those issues.
All right. You've never held elected office, though, correct?
That's right. No one in my family's ever run for office. I've never run for office before. And, you know, maybe some years that's a hindrance. But this year, when you see, like, as you mentioned and as you noted to Bruce earlier, that there is a angry electorate out there because of what is taking place in Washington, D.C. And, you know, that's part of the reason I got into this is because I feel those same frustrations when it comes to the policy being made and continue to talk about the issues that people care about.
My guest, if you just joined us, is Ben Lang, an attorney from Independence who is challenging Bruce Braley this election cycle in Iowa's 1st District. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question for Ben Lang, 1-866-780-9100. You started your political career, Ben Lang, as an aide to Minnesota Congressman Republican John Klein. What did you gain during that experience that prepares you to represent the 1st District in Iowa as a political aide to Congressman Klein?
Sure. Well, to be clear, I was a policy advisor. I wasn't connected on the political side, on the campaign side. What I got into was, I watched 9/11 unfold on my TV, and that had an impact on what I wanted to do with my career. And national security was an interest of mine. And as a result of that, I was a policy advisor in the national security field. So that's my background in the policy world. And he was a 25-year retired colonel in the Marines, and I'm proud of having worked for him.
Okay, let's go to our phones. Let's go to Rita. And Rita, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Iowa City.
Okay, not the 1st District, but what's your question?
No. Well, I confess, as I was listening to the program, I was getting a little bit frustrated at how very slick Mr. Lang was in not answering your question about where he stands on all this anonymous money that is flooding the election. He would not answer whether he is in favor of it, of full disclosure, or against it.
Okay, Rita from Iowa City, we'll give him another chance at it. What's your answer to that question, Ben Lang?
I'm sorry, there's some cutting out, but can you repeat that for me, Ben?
Rita, did you hear Rita, Ben Lang? Okay,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
She was referring to an earlier question about whether you believe that we, as taxpayers, as voters, should know where this anonymous money is coming from that is flowing into our election as never before.
This is again the issue that we just talked about here, Ben. Is we have Bruce Braley being supported by outside influences 91% of the time, and there's no issue with it. He's been supported for his entire career from this, and
to get to Rita's point,
he continues to bring it up as voters are curious about it. But the voters aren't talking about this. Voters are talking about his voting record, and if he wants to talk about outside influence, we can talk about his 91% coming from outside the 1st District of Iowa.
Okay. Congressman John Klein, you worked for him in Minnesota, currently a ranking member in the House Education Labor Committee. If the GOP becomes a majority in the House, Klein is expected to become the chair of that committee. He said that he opposes some of President Obama's initiatives in education. For example, Klein does not support adding money to extend the Race to the Top competition. Do you agree with that?
Well, Ben, the education issue really hit home to me about a month and a half ago when I took my 3.5-year-old to preschool for the very first time. And, I quickly realized right then and there that there isn't a teacher, there is an administrator, there isn't a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. that cares more about her education than my wife and I do. So what I continue to talk to folks about, and I hear good feedback on this, is that the people closest to the students, the people that are closest to them, are best equipped, best able to make those decisions, and I think they're the ones that care most about the students. So I absolutely support making sure that parents and students have access to the best education possible. And it, like I mentioned before, it really hit home about a month and a half ago when I took my 3.5-year-old to preschool. And, I'll continue to support policies that allow people right here in Iowa to have control over educating their children.
Let's go to Joy in Cedar Rapids, who I believe has a question about health care, which we definitely wanted to raise before the end of the hour. Good afternoon, Joy.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Lang, can specifics, please, on your positions on Medicare, Social Security, and the health care bill, and also minimum wage, if you can throw that in.
Okay, what do you want to do with this health care reform? Do you want to, as Bruce Braley characterized it, repeal the whole thing?
Well, I think Bruce noted that people are upset with this legislation, and I think as a member of Congress, we need to make sure that we have respect from the electorate, and that when we're out there talking to people, we have their support. And clearly, they don't support this legislation. The polls, as you noted, Ben, they don't support Obamacare. And what we need to do, though, is, and I talk to my Republican colleagues about this, is when we're out there talking, yes, I don't support Obamacare, but we have to win on ideas, and we will win on ideas when it comes to health care. And this is a matter of making sure that people that care most about their health care coverage, they're the ones in control and being able to select the coverage that best suits their needs. That includes locally here in Iowa, and if there's a better plan that is provided out there across the country for them, they should be able to go out and get that health care plan to provide the best coverage for them and their family.
Okay, but the question was, would you work to repeal this health care reform lock, stock, and barrel?
Repeal and replace, that's correct.
Okay, so even some of the very popular aspects of it, the national high-risk insurance pool to provide coverage with people with pre-existing conditions, allowing children to stay on their parents' insurance until 26, no lifetime limits on how much money some people can receive from their health insurance plan, those go out the door. Start over.
What I've said is that we repeal the current policy and put in place a policy that American people have confidence in, because they clearly don't have confidence in what has just taken place a moment ago. And to think, you know, that the government is going to somehow run 1/6 of our economy more efficiently, I don't believe a lot of folks have a lot of confidence in that. So, yeah, we do repeal it, but then we have ideas that we put in place. So it's a repeal and replace.
So the three ideas that I mentioned, would they be in the replacement?
Can you mention the ideas to me there?
National high-risk insurance pool to provide coverage to people with pre-existing conditions, allowing children to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26, and no lifetime limits on how much money someone can receive from their health insurance plan.
I think what we could do from a healthcare side is create a state exchange where we can create state high-risk pools, because you know, population across America, we're not all the same. There's different needs in Florida, different needs in Minnesota, different needs in California. So I think we can address those issues from the state side, people that are closest to the individuals, to their population, and create those high-risk pools that you're mentioning right there. So, yeah, those are some of the ideas that we can address and talk about. But we need to repeal what has just taken place right now, because this is potentially a $2.6 trillion entitlement program that we cannot afford.
Why not take what we have and work on the things that we don't like to refine it rather than repeal the whole thing? If we've got several things, polls show, and the things I named, very popular with the American public.
Because I think, as I mentioned before, the polls don't show that people support this legislation. And we are working for the people of Eastern Iowa and working for people of this country. And we want to make sure we have their support when legislation is pushed through. And this was shoved through. And so that's why I continue to go back of repealing and replacing this, because people do not have confidence in what has just taken place a few months back.
An Associated Press poll recently found that 40% of respondents say health care reform did not go far enough. What do you think of that? 40% of respondents nationwide say more should have been done.
Well, I think that shows the frustration from both sides. And clearly my opponent had the same opinion that more should have been done. He wanted a true public option with this. And, you know, again, going back to what we are going to do with health care is we all acknowledge that health care reform is needed, and I will continue to advocate for that, just not government-run health care reform. And we're to a point now where voters will have that opportunity, that are we going to send Bruce Braley back to office and send the same politicians back there and hope that there's some change? Are we going to send somebody that's going to say enough is enough with this? And we want somebody that's putting principle before party. And I think that's what voters are going to decide on November 2nd.
Ben Lang, just a couple minutes left. I wanted to get this in. Where do you stand on whether the Bush tax cuts should be renewed?
What I have told repeatedly to many folks that have asked me about this is that I do not believe, and economists agree with this, that we cannot increase taxes when we are currently in a jobless recovery right now. And that I think that stretches across both sides of the aisle. And so we need to put in place confidence in private industry, small business owners, that we are not going to increase taxes on them. We can set it 2 years from right now. We will not do anything for 2 years. Give them the confidence in what is taking place so they can plan. And then we can address the issues based upon the economy at that point in time down the road.
So some say that eliminating, or at least, well, you say that eliminating or driving down the federal deficit is one of the key components of your campaign. But how can you justify renewing tax cuts that could end up adding to our deficit? These are tax cuts that Mr. Braley says will not be renewed, only for those earning more than $250,000.
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge here that These are tax increases. This is what's going to happen in January if no action is done. If we send the same politicians back to Washington, D.C., tax increases will happen if they don't take action upon it. So we need to know that that is what is going to happen if we send them back there, and voters realize that. And as far as the national debt is absolutely a real concern. And when I talk to people out there, what is it, $13.5 trillion right now, that number is so large that it's hard to grasp $13 trillion. I know where I come from, small town Quasqueton, Iowa. We don't grasp trillions of dollars. But if you break it down to an individual family, a family of four here in eastern Iowa, their share being $176,000, that's their share of the debt. I think people find that irresponsible that we put ourselves in that position. And I think, you know, tough decisions have to be made across the board, but we're prepared to make them. We're prepared to make them on principle as opposed to a political rhetoric from either side of the aisle.
Ben Lang, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much. Ben Lang, an attorney from Independence, who is the Republican opponent of Bruce Braley for Iowa's 1st District. Ben Lang, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese in Cedar Falls. We had help from Phil Moss. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio available. If you'd like to listen to all or part of this hour again, go to iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.